We were quiet at first. Nobody looked at anybody. Nobody spoke. We were thinking about the maid. I was in the back, and Duffy was in the front with Quinn's paperwork spread over her knees. Traffic across the bridge was slow. There were shoppers heading into the city. The roadway was slick with rain and salt spray. Duffy shuffled papers, glancing at one after another. Then she broke the silence. It was a relief.
"This all is pretty cryptic," she said. "We've got an XX and a BB.
Xavier Export Company and Bizarre Bazaar," I said.
"BB is importing. XX is exporting. But they're obviously linked. They're like two halves of the same operation."
"I don't care. I just want Quinn." "And Teresa," Villanueva said.
"First quarter spreadsheet," Duffy said. "They're on track to turn over $22 million this year. That's a lot of guns, I guess."
"Quarter million Saturday night specials," I said. "Or four Abrams tanks."
"Mossberg?" Duffy said. "You heard that name?"
"Why?"
"XX just received a shipment from them."
"OF Mossberg and Sons, from New Haven, Connecticut. Shotgun manufacturer."
"What's a persuader?"
"A shotgun. The Mossberg M500 persuader. It's a paramilitary weapon."
"XX is sending persuaders someplace. 200 of them. Total invoice value, $60,000. Basically, in exchange for something BB is receiving."
"Import-export. That's how it works."
"But the prices don't add up. BB's incoming shipment is invoiced at $70,000, so XX is coming out $10,000 ahead."
"The magic of capitalism."
"No, wait. There's another item. Now it balances. 200 Mossberg persuaders plus a $10,000 bonus item to make the values match."
"What's the bonus item?"
"It doesn't say. What would be worth 10 grand?
"I don't care." She shuffled more paper.
"Keist and Maiden. Where do we see those names?"
"The building behind Quinn's. The caterers."
"He hired them. They're delivering something today."
"Where?"
"Doesn't say."
"What kind of something?"
"Doesn't say. 18 items at $55 each. Almost $1,000 worth of something."
"Where to now?" We were off the bridge and looping north and west with the park on our left. "Make the second right." We pulled straight into Missionary House's underground garage. There was a rent-a-cop in a fancy uniform in a booth. He logged us in without paying a whole lot of attention. Then Villanueva showed him his DEA badge and told him to sit tight and keep quiet, told him not to call anybody. Behind him, the garage was quiet. There were maybe 80 spaces and fewer than a dozen cars in them. But one of them was the gray Grand Marquis I had seen outside Beck's warehouse that morning.
"This is where I took the photographs," Duffy said.
We drove to the back of the garage and parked in a corner. Got out and took the elevator up one floor to the lobby. There was some tired marble decor and a building directory. The Xavier Export Company shared the fourth floor with a law firm called Lewis, Strange, and Greville. We were happy about that. It meant there would be an interior hallway up there. We wouldn't be stepping straight out of the elevator into Quinn's offices. We got back in the elevator and pressed 4, faced front. The doors closed and the motor whined. We stopped on 4. We heard voices. The elevator bell pinged, the doors opened. The hallway was full of lawyers. There was a mahogany door on the left with a brass plate marked Lewis, Strange, and Greville, attorneys at law. It was open, and 3 people had come out through it and were standing around waiting for one of them to close it. 2 men, 1 woman. They were in casual clothes. They were all carrying briefcases. They all looked happy. They all turned and looked at us. We stepped out of the elevator. They smiled and nodded at us, like you do with strangers in a small hallway. Or maybe they thought we had come to consult with them on a legal matter. Villanueva smiled back and nodded toward Xavier Export's door, as if to say, "It's not you we're looking for, it's them." The woman lawyer looked away and squeezed past us into the elevator. Her partners locked up their office and joined her. The elevator doors closed on them, and we heard the car winding down.
"Witnesses," Duffy whispered. "Shit."
Villanueva pointed at Xavier Export's door. And there's someone in there. Those lawyers didn't seem surprised that we should be up here at this time on a Saturday, so they must know there's someone in there. Maybe they thought we've got an appointment or something. I nodded. One of the cars in the garage was at Beck's warehouse this morning.
Quinn?
Duffy said. I sincerely hope so. We agreed, Teresa first, Villanueva said. Then Quinn. I'm changing the plan. I'm not walking away. Not if he's in there. Not if he's a target of opportunity.
But we can't go in anyway, Duffy said. We've been seen.
You can't go in. I can.
What? Alone?
That's the way I want it. Him and me.
We left a trail.
So roll it up. Go back to the garage and drive away. The guard will log you out, then call this office 5 minutes later. Between the garage log and the phone log, it'll be on record that nothing happened while you were here.
But what about you? It'll be on record that we left you in here.
I doubt it. I don't think the garage guy paid that much attention. I don't think he counted heads or anything. He just wrote down the plate number. She said nothing. I don't care, anyway. I'm a hard person to find, and I plan to get harder. She looked at the law firm's door, then at Xavier Exports, then at the elevator, then at me.
Okay, we'll leave you to it. I really don't want to, but I really have to. You understand?
Completely. Teresa might be in there with him, Villanueva whispered. I nodded. If she is, I'll bring her to you. Meet me at the end of the street, 10 minutes after you make the phone call. They both hesitated, and then Duffy put her finger on the elevator call button. We heard noises in the shaft as the machinery started.
Take care, she said.
The bell pinged and the doors opened. They stepped in. Villanueva glanced out at me and hit the button, and the doors closed on them like theater curtains, and they were gone. I stepped away and leaned on the wall on the far side of Quinn's door. It felt good to be alone. I put my hand around the Beretta's grip in my pocket and waited. I imagined Duffy and Villanueva stepping out of the elevator and walking to their car, driving it out of the garage, getting noticed by the guard, parking around the corner and calling information, getting Quinn's number. I turned and stared at the door, imagined Quinn on the other side of it, at his desk with a phone in front of him. I stared at the door like I could see him right through it. The first time I ever saw him was on the actual day of the bust. Frasconi had done well with the Syrian. The guy was all squared away. Frasconi was very adequate in a situation like that. Give him time and a clear objective, and he could deliver. The Syrian brought cash money with him from inside his embassy, and we all sat down together in front of the judge advocate and counted it. There was $50,000. We figured it was the final installment of many. We marked each bill separately. We even marked the briefcase. We put the judge advocate's initials on it with clear nail varnish near one of the hinges. The judge advocate wrote up an affidavit for the file, and Frasconi held on to the Syrian, and Cole and I moved into a position ready for the surveillance itself. Her photographer was already standing by in a second-floor window in a building across the street from the cafe and 20 yards south. The judge advocate joined us 10 minutes later. We were using a utility truck parked at the curb. It had portholes with one-way glass. Cole had borrowed it from the FBI. She had drafted 3 grunts to complete the illusion. They were wearing power company overalls and actually digging up the street.